Hello and welcome to the Roto World Baseball Show. I'm your host, Eric Samulski, joined by Scott Pianowski. Scott, we got some good news today. With the podcast, we'll have some good and bad news. We're going to talk about some early plate discipline risers and fallers, improvers and decliners, whatever term you want to use. But we got to start with the big story in the baseball world today, which is many people's top prospect, Jackson Holliday, getting the call for the Orioles. We don't yet have their official starting lineup, but we have to assume he will be in there. You and I spoke about it on Monday. We said we don't think it's going to be that long. We said, you know, before May. Turns out it was 2 days later he got the call up.
Yes, the Jackson Holliday is here, and I would say not just a prospect, not just most people's number one prospect. I think he's like the overwhelming majority. I think it's a unanimous number one prospect. He was the number one pick in the 2022 draft. His father, Matt Holliday, was a seven-time All-Star batting champion. The bloodlines are perfect, right? His grandfather is a college baseball coach for like 40 years. His uncle is a college baseball head coach. Obviously, I mentioned Matt Holliday, who was an All-Star. And, you know, the stories of Matt Holliday throwing wiffle balls to his son, you know, at Coors Field when he was like two or three, and the teammates saying, this kid's going to be a star someday. Although Jackson Holliday was a little bit of a late bloomer. He didn't really take off as a prospect until the last couple of years, but since then he's just hit everything in sight. He was good in spring training despite a lot of strikeouts. He still had a good slash line, and he was obviously ripping up AAA before the call-up. So I'm excited. You know, the funny thing is, and Andy Behrens was making fun of me for this a little bit on Twitter because I wrote a Holliday hype piece today. I'm usually not the guy who drafts the rookies. You know, baseball's hard. And for every Adley Rutschman, who's great right away, I mean, Mike Trout wasn't good his rookie year. He was a superstar by year two. Bryce Harper was good as a rookie at 19, but he didn't destroy baseball. I mean, he was, you know, like a MVP 4 years later. And, you know, Bryce Harper's, you know, going to the Hall of Fame. And as I often talk about, he's going to have a better second half of his career than Trout did, or Trout is having. But although Trout's off to a pretty decent start this year. But
yeah, not so bad.
It's all – there's no rule with this stuff. Some guys are the first overall pick in the draft class and aren't great right away. I mean, look at all the early picks the Tigers have had. They're still hoping those guys put it together. We'll talk a little bit about Riley Green later in the show, I think. But so it's easy to say, oh, yeah, you know, Jackson Holliday, he's going to destroy baseball right away. He's like all the other Orioles. Mm-hmm. But baseball's hard. He's 20. And then also part of why he didn't come up, and I've talked for a long time, so I'm going to actually give you the floor back in a second. I think part of why he didn't come up right away was because five of the first 10 Baltimore opponents were left-handed. Holliday's a left-handed batter. So maybe they just wanted to shield him away from, he's not going to be a platoon guy, at least not in the long term. But maybe the idea was, okay, let's just let him go to AAA and go Godzilla on AAA for a while, then come up when it makes sense. Obviously, they're getting no production at third base, so Holliday probably will slot at second. They'll shift the infield around. Bottom line is this. Baseball in the spring is about hope. It's about dreams. And no team in baseball symbolizes the, okay, let's get a bunch of good players who are young and you know, controlled for a while, and they'll grow together into a juggernaut. And I'm curious to see if Baltimore does the model that Atlanta did, where they bought out a lot of these guys with the arbitration years and they signed them to long-term deals. Sometimes maybe those are more team-friendly than player-friendly. Ozzie Albies waves hello. But I'm just excited to watch the kid play. It's Fenway Park. It's tonight, 7 o'clock. It's a great day for baseball.
No, it'll be really good. I mean, I think your point about the left-handed pitchers is a really good one. I mean, we did see a 31% strikeout rate in spring training. I think it was like, hey, go down, control the strike zone, hit lefties. It's not going to be that long. He went down, he controlled the strike zone, 21% walk rate, 14% strikeout rate in AAA.
Anytime you see that, anytime you see more walks than strikeouts, especially from somebody who isn't a banjo hitter, I get excited. Yeah.
And listen, all it cost was 2 weeks of the Orioles deciding, okay, who is a better fit as our bench infielder? Is it Tony Kemp or is it Ramon Urias? It's going to be Ramon Urias. Tony Kemp is being designated for assignment in this move. And so I think there was a lot of hand wringing about like playing time manipulation or service time manipulation. And I think it wound up not being that. It wound up being a situation where a young player got 2 weeks to, you know, really start the season off on a good note. The organization got to decide who was the best bench piece for them to keep. And now Holliday is up. We have to expect he's up for the rest of the season. Obviously, he's only 20 years old, so if he struggles, the Orioles can send him back, and they have the depth to send him back. I don't think that's anybody's expectation. To your point, I don't think we should be expecting him to set the world on fire. Remember that this is a guy who hit 10 home runs last year across three levels because he's just 20 years old. He hasn't grown into his full power yet. He will have more power as he gets older. He's going to hit a few home runs this year. It wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't reach double digits. You know, if he went 10 homers, 10 steals for the remainder of the year, I think that's pretty solid in those categories. And maybe he hits 260, 270. Like, I think if you're expecting that, you know, in a good lineup where he has the opportunity to drive in runs and score runs, probably hitting at the bottom of the lineup for the foreseeable future. Like, I think if we take those expectations, like, that's a pretty solid starting point. He should be on rosters. He's rostered in 83% of Yahoo leagues. Outside of the most shallow formats, I would make sure that he's on the rest of those 17% of rosters. But yeah, this isn't like a fully matured rookie coming up who has, you know, who's a 24-year-old who has his full power already in, you know, in bloom, who's got like, an extensive amount of minor league at bats to fall back on. So I just think, like, be happy. He's going to be good. I wouldn't expect crazy fantasy production right out of the gate.
That's perfectly reasonable. In fact, what my angle used to be when these top prospects, and again, he's the prospect, not a top prospect. He's the top prospect. My school of thought used to be, well, if you have this guy, the day comes up, it's never a bad idea just to take the temperature of the league. If somebody's just, you know, they have all the FOMO about they wanted the draft holiday. Right. Maybe they thought, oh, when is he going to come up? I don't know if he's going to play a full season and all that stuff. And it's nice that baseball changed the rules now that teams have incentives to get players up. And if Holiday factors into the rookie of the year voting, they can get draft pick compensation. So that's at least I don't know if they perfectly fixed that system, but they've made a significant improvement to it. So that's all that chicanery that used to exist is pretty much eliminated now. But I'll give you something actionable here. And this is a drum you've been banging on. And I think you mentioned it on Monday's show as well. So you wanted Holiday, you don't have him. Maybe you wanted Adley Rutschman or you wanted any of the young players here, right? Well, this is a young player who's screaming for your attention named Colton Cowser, who was a number five pick in his draft class, who was only blocked by Austin Hayes. Austin Hayes got off to a poor start. Cowser starting to pick up more of the playing time. He had four RBIs in the win over the Red Sox, spoiling the Red Sox home opener on Tuesday. And the last I checked, his roster tag in Yahoo is 10%. So for all the FOMO, for all the Jackson Holiday FOMO you might have, I'll tell you how to get rid of some of that. Pick up Colton Cowser today.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what happens in tonight's lineup. Cowser started on Monday over Austin Hayes and hit well. If he gets a start again tonight, I think that is a signal that this isn't just, oh, Hayes was getting a day off. This is a legitimate, you know, battle for that left field spot, which I think Cowser can win. So really pay attention to that. If you are in a league that has like daily moves, by the time you're listening to this podcast, the lineup will be out. Or if you listen to it on Thursday morning, the game will have been played. But if Cowser is starting in that game, I'm trying to pick him up as much as possible.
And a nice thing, just one more thing about the Orioles I want to mention is that a nice thing is that this is not a roster on the come in the sense of, oh, wouldn't it be nice if the Orioles were 500 this year, this year? They've already made the playoffs and last year, and they already think they can go to the World Series. So the objective to be as good as they can basically be today, I know we had to wait 2 weeks for Holiday. The kid's 20. It's reasonable, right? But the idea isn't going to be like, oh, well, let's not put too much pressure on it. You know, let's be great now. Right. Adley Rutschman can be the best player in the American League theoretically right now. You know, Grayson Rodriguez could be an all-star right now. Colton Cowser could be a rave. They think Colton Cowser is better than Austin Hayes, which I think they're going to come to that conclusion pretty darn quickly come to it already. Let's play him right now. There's none of this, oh, we're getting ready for, you know, a couple of years down the road. They want to go to the World Series this season.
Yeah, and I think these guys will help them. You mentioned, obviously, the benefits. If Holiday finishes in the top two of the AL Rookie of the Year, race, then the Orioles will get a draft pick as compensation for that. He is currently right now the third favorite on DraftKings with odds of plus 320. He's behind only Wyatt Langford, who's still the leader at plus 225, and Wyatt Langford's teammate, Evan Carter, who's plus 310. We mentioned Kowser in there as well. He's 10-1 to win AL Rookie of the Year. But I think, you know, Holiday, Langford, and Carter are probably the guys in terms of how that stacks up. And so the Orioles saw an opportunity to say, you know what, like let's help ourselves this year and get a potential draft pick from that. We have some sad news to report. The continued elbow injuries for pitchers. Just early after we recorded on Monday, we also saw Chase Silseth of the Angels go on the IL with an elbow injury. He had an MRI yesterday. The Angels have not yet provided an update. And then we saw Nick Pivetta with a flexor strain go on the IL. Craig Breslow of the Red Sox did speak yesterday, and he said that they expect Pivetta to be on the short side of the IL stint, that he might come back as soon as he's eligible. The MRI showed that his UCL was fully intact. There was just some inflammation, and given what their schedule was in terms of what the off days were they had coming up, they felt like now was a good time to put Pivetta on the IL because they could use the off days and use one spot start, and Pivetta wouldn't have to miss that much time. I guess my question to you as both a Red Sox fan, but also just as a baseball fan who has seen teams with these kind of optimistic timelines, do you think you're out of the woods if you have Nick Pivetta on your fantasy team? Or is this a situation where, like, sure, he may come back soon, but you're really nervous about what the rest of the year looks like?
Maybe I'm drinking the Red Sox Kool-Aid and the Andrew Bailey Kool-Aid, pitching coach, but I think Pivetta's going to be back fairly soon. And this seems like a little bit of what the Dodgers do sometimes, where pitcher has a hiccup, pitcher has a burp, let's just not risk anything. Let's think long term, but have a short term skip. As they mentioned, you know, there's a lot of off days in the calendar in April, so it makes it, they can do it and not really lose that much competitively. Mm-hmm. I also want to point out, we if you want to go deeper into what's going on in baseball and this epidemic of pitcher injuries, we talked extensively on that Monday's podcast, and Eric, I thought, had some great and unique feedback with some of his baseball experiences, some of the people he's talked to, and talked about how we can make some changes in the youth part of the game and the development part of the game. And I think it's a great conversation you should go back and listen to. I also want to point out that Brandon McCarthy, the former Major League Baseball pitcher, who's a tremendous follow on Twitter X, was talking about some of the pitcher injuries yesterday. And look, a lot of these discussions are, they're more questions than answers and speculation, and it's sounding out theories and everything. And Brandon wanted to remind, and Brandon's just a really thoughtful, interesting guy. Obviously, he had a career of some note. At one point, he was kind of a touted prospect. He had an up and down career, but he was successful in the major leagues and really one of my favorite follows on Twitter. So he was speculating that maybe we're not giving enough attention to the fact that these injuries a lot of times hit with a rush early in the season because these guys don't pitch. You know, they play Major League Baseball for half the year, or minor league baseball, professional baseball, whatever it is. And, you know, some guys maybe go to the fall league, or they play some foreign baseball after that. But, you know, there's different things that people do in the off season, and it's not unusual to see a heavy amount of, you know, when everybody has to go back to work in spring training. That's and it's not just pitchers too. There's been a ton of injuries for position players too. Right. The problem with the pitchers is that when they have a major injury, it might be James Andrews, it might be Tommy John surgery, and their career, mm-hmm. you know, it's a total, you know, the plug is pulled out. But yeah, I thought Brandon had some interesting ideas about maybe if there's a reason why this stuff happens early in the season more than at other times during the year. He said that he didn't have the hard data for that, but it sounded intuitively that was correct.
There is hard data. Eno okay. Saris also mentioned yep. that on the last Rates and Barrels, and then there's a graph connected to it that March and April is where we mm-hmm. see the most of these Tommy John surgeries, and then it winds down. Eno also mentioned that sometimes that's because guys have had injuries that they're not surgically repaired in the mm-hmm. off season. And then as they yeah. ramp back up to full, you start to feel that again. And that was specifically the case with Bieber, where Bieber mentioned that even in the off season work at Driveline, he didn't really feel any of the issues. And once he started pitching in games again, that's when he started to feel the tightness that he felt like at times last year come back. Mm-hmm. And he realized it had never fully gone away. I thought it was interesting too, both Alex Wood, who's currently pitching for the Oakland Athletics, and Jameson Taillon, who's currently pitching for the Cubs, were on Twitter mentioning that part of the reason that we see these injuries is because guys actually don't have an offseason anymore, mm-hmm. that a lot of pitchers are continuing to throw all offseason because they need to get better. They need to add velo. They need to add pitches. They need to do all these things where, like, if they don't, their jobs are in jeopardy, right? If they don't improve, somebody could take their spot. Mm-hmm. That there's no longer this idea that, like, oh, I'll just take 3 full months off from throwing and then I'll get back and ramp up slowly. And that they were saying that it's not even just throwing, but throwing off the mound adds even more stress on your arm. So these guys who do this offseason work and are continuing to throw off a mound regularly all offseason, they're just putting even more strain on their arms. And so they have these injuries at the beginning of the year just because they've never actually rested. And, you know, maybe they dialed it back a little bit as they were doing this work. They weren't throwing 100%. They were throwing, you know, 80%. They were trying to find their grips or whatever. And now they're dialing it up, but their arms are just so worn down. So that's some interesting things to note.
There's some great. That's what I mentioned. One more thing. Just you mentioned Taillon, you mentioned Wood. I mentioned Brandon McCarthy. Gerrit Cole addressed this at length a couple days ago in New York. Justin Verlander had a really good clip mm-hmm. that was circulating on Twitter that was maybe 4 or 5 minutes. Trevor Bauer, who's always got something interesting to say. I know people have different opinions on him, but he had a lot of good thoughts on this topic as well. I don't follow him, but it did percolate into my timeline, and I was interested to hear what Trevor Bauer had to say. And he always had an unusual regimen, what he would do. He always had a very different way of preparing, and for whatever, I don't think he's had a lot of major injuries in his career. We'll see if he ever gets back into baseball or not. But it's I guess the silver lining in this really kind of dark area that we're at is at least it's forcing conversations. And some of the – Bill James used to always say that the best pitchers were the smartest pitchers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our – Dan Heron is another guy on Twitter who's always got interesting to say. And his Twitter account is iThrow88 or something like that, which is kind of an interesting wink at today's context where everybody's trying to throw 110 miles an hour, it feels like, at times. And there's Dan Heron trying to do the surgery in the 80s. But he's also another great follow. So the silver lining to me in this dark moment that we have is at least it's getting a lot of interesting theories and smart conversations out there.
That is something, and hopefully we get something from that. You mentioned, obviously, it's not just the pitchers who are getting injured. We saw another injury for the White Sox.
White Sox,
it's just, it is tough for them. The lineup was already bad. Their 3 best hitters arguably are now hurt. Yoan Moncada, that was a rough injury to watch. I mean, it's going down as an adductor strain, which is, his hip. He was sprinting down the line on a ground ball and just, like, he got shot in the leg. I mean, just hopped up and down a few times, hobbled, fell to the ground, didn't reach first base. It looked incredibly serious. The White Sox haven't updated a timeline. He is going on the IL. They are calling up Oscar Colas, who, was an interesting prospect before last year and struggled last year, but he's looked good in the early going at AAA. In particular, his strikeout rate is just 12.5% in the first 8 games at AAA. It was 27% in the majors last year and 22% in AAA last year. So that is a skills growth for him, hitting .321 with a homer and a steal early on in AAA. This is what the White Sox should have been doing anyway. He's 25 years old. Like, figure out what you have with him. You don't need to be playing Kevin Pillar and Robbie Grossman and guys like this. Like, you're not contending this year. Find out if guys like Oscar Colas are part of your future. It looks like we will get that opportunity in deeper leagues. I'm more than happy to take a flyer. I think he's going to play pretty much every day in the early going. He has shown improvement in AAA this year. It's only 8 games, so we don't know if it's real or not. But if it's real, people are going to pick him up because he does have an interesting power-speed combination. And so if you want to take a flyer and see in your deeper formats, if there's anything to it, I think by all means, it's worth a bench stash. If you're in NFBC formats, you now have a whole week probably of some data to see how does he look in his first four games up. And if it starts off fine, you know, he's probably going to hit somewhere near the middle of that lineup. So that is somebody that I would keep an eye on, at least.
And you mentioned Moncada. It ties into what I was saying about Holiday, that Moncada, right, his prospect pedigree, he was the big part of the sale trade. He was, depending on where you look, the number two or number three overall prospect in baseball at his peak before he hit the majors. And I know a lot of it has been injury related, but he never developed into the star that people expected. And that's just a reminder that, you know, for every guy who hits the ground running or becomes a star, there's a lot of Juan Moncadas too.
Yeah, it's fully true. Just some quick hitters. Jose Miranda was called up by the Twins. They've already said that he's not going to be a full-time player. So yeah, Miranda will factor in probably more against lefties because he's a right-handed hitter. I wouldn't be rushing out to add him, but Willy Castro is struggling, so something to keep an eye on, depending on if there's more possibility for playing time for Miranda. Graham Pauly for the Padres was demoted. He was somebody people thought might play everywhere and get playing time early on. He will not. The Astros are calling up Spencer Arrigetti to take Framber Valdez's spot. Arrigetti's an interesting prospect. He is very kind of like data focused. So he's somebody who's continually tweaking and working on the arsenal. He had looked good through two appearances in the minor leagues this year. He's somebody who's never like set the world on fire, even, you know, with good appearances in AA in 2022 and 2023. He had, you know, a 3.43 ERA the first time through and then a 4.15 ERA the second time through. So you're not looking at like, you know, a Bobby Miller level of pitching prospect, but a solid pitching prospect on a good team is somebody to take note of. And then the Mets are allegedly calling up Jose Budo to take the spot in the rotation that was briefly held by Julio Teheran, who pitched one game and then was designated for assignment. Listen, Budo looked good in the spring. He made some pitch mix tweaks. He had a good first outing with the doubleheader. He was the 27th man of the doubleheader. Six innings against the Tigers. He allowed one run on three hits. He struck out six. You know, Citi Field plays slightly as a pitcher's park. So Jose Budo, I think, immediately is on the radar in terms of streaming and could be on the radar as an actual pickup in deeper formats if we see the spring training changes start to carry over in the early going here. So he's somebody that I think that maybe should be on your watch lists early on. I wouldn't go ahead and just like outright add him. But he has a decent start against the Royals this weekend is what they're apparently going to call him up for. The Royals are no longer like the doormat offense, but they're still not a tremendous offense. So it is an interesting start to see kind of like what level he's at. So some names to watch for.
Let me throw out two quick reactions to that. DJ Short, our man on the ground with the Mets, was tweeting about Reed Garrett, one of their relievers, who has 9 strikeouts in 5 1/3 innings. He's a little bit of a journeyman. He's in his 30s already. I always say that every year around this time, you should just look for some relievers you've never heard of who have great walk to strikeout ratios. Garrett has walked a couple of guys, but the strikeout stuff speaks to itself, and he was striking out the Braves. He was basically going for the whole lineup, and that's, of course, littered with all-stars and MVP candidates. That team is ridiculous. So Reed Garrett's a type of player in a lot of my deeper leagues I'm looking to add right now. This is why I don't draft the middle relief heroes necessarily. I think they're going to graduate to closer spots really quickly. I don't draft them a lot in March because I feel like these Reed Garrett types come out of the woodwork a lot. I don't think Monday we talked about Framber Valdez injury. I think it maybe hit.
It popped after.
Yeah,
it did. It was like right in the middle of the.
Yeah. What was your takeaway on that? What was your, do you have a word of wisdom for the Valdez crowd?
That's a good call. It worries me. I mean, the fact that they say, hey, we're not overly worried, but we're going to put him on the IL and we're going to send him to Houston to meet with doctors. You're like, oh, okay. So that's not great. And then again, it's been 2 days and we've had radio silence. And so, you know, that was a little bit of the issue with Yuri Perez, right? Like Nick Pivetta and Framber Valdez, we heard about at the same time. We already know what's happening with Nick Pivetta. We know the MRI results. We know, you know, what the Red Sox plan to do. I don't know why We haven't heard that from the Astros. Yesterday, all we heard was, quote, he's going to need some time to recover. Hopefully, it could be just like maybe two starts. But Joe Espada, the Astros manager, said they didn't get any news on the ligament, which is just feels like a lie to me. Like, if you had an MRI, you would have gotten news on the ligament.
That's why you have an MRI. Yep.
How are they saying he's going to need some time to recover, but they didn't get news on the ligament? That, to me, that those pieces don't add up. And when the pieces don't add up, I get skeptical and I get nervous. And so I think it might be a little while for Framber Valdez. It gives Ronel Blanco a longer run in the rotation, which helps his fantasy value. And obviously, Arrigetti will get a chance until Verlander's back, and Verlander might be back in a couple of weeks. So, you know, Arrigetti also doesn't have a really long runway here, even if Framber's out.
Yeah. I always say that you really need common sense and a sharp BS detector to be a good fantasy analyst. And even though I have no history with Espada, he's a new manager. I'm not calling him a liar or anything, but you have to, you know, some stuff doesn't pass the smell test. And this is one of those cases. I'll close with this. You mentioned Verlander, who we're hoping to come back soon. It's an unusual. I've made that nugget mention of there's only two current Cy Young Award winners who are active in baseball. Yeah. It's Corbin Burns and Blake Snell just returned on Monday, which is just crazy to me. But so many guys like Verlander and Scherzer and DeGrom and Kershaw, right, who have all these awards at home, aren't ready to pitch yet. Walker Buehler's another great pitcher who's not that far away from return. I don't think he won a Cy Young. He was in contention several years. But it's, to me, it feels like an unusual year where there's so much star power with pitching that isn't going to be ready to start the year. There's certainly certain different expectations with all these guys. I think if the Rangers got anything out of the Jake DeGrom contract, they'd feel lucky at this point. Sure. There's probably higher expectations with Scherzer, Verlander coming back soon, Buehler coming back soon, Kershaw. We're looking at a second-half return for him. I'm just curious if you rostered any of these guys or if you have a general takeaway about them. Of course, with the exception of Buehler, everybody else is, you know, not only in the back nine of their career, but they could be in their final season with all these guys. You know, I guess with DeGrom, they hope he would pitch longer. But, you know, Verlander's not going to pitch that much longer. Scherzer's close to retirement. Yeah. I feel like Kershaw's year to year at this point. Did this group interest you on draft day, or are you holding some of these guys? Just, do you have a takeaway with them?
Yeah, we should also note that even though he's not involved in this group in age, Kyle Bradish was another guy who was hurt at the beginning of the year, who was beginning a rehab assignment. No surgery to repair his UCL. It was rest and rehab. And so who knows how long he may last the full season. He might not. We don't know. I generally speaking was avoiding this tier, this group, you know, outside of like some draft and hold leagues where like if I took them, if they dropped, because, you know, I'd have them at the end of the year. I was happier taking a guy like Shane Baz, who I think is healthier and is having his innings monitored by the Rays, and he'll come back in the spring. And, you know, I has less wear and tear on the arm. If the guys fell, I was happy to stash them in leagues where I have IL spots, but there are just so many pitcher injuries that I generally don't want to draft guys who are already starting the year on the IL. I have questions about Verlander and Buehler's effectiveness this year. I don't know when DeGrom and Scherzer will be back. You know, we have updates on their timeline, but they're older guys who have multiple injuries. So like, what if there are setbacks, things like that. They are guys who, like, as we get closer, if they're on your waiver wire, I'd be happy to stash and put on my IL if I have a chance. I think these are guys who sometimes get drafted and then somebody starts having a bunch of injuries rack up and they're like, I can't keep holding Max Scherzer. He might be back in June or July. I don't know. I'm just going to cut him. And I think you find these guys wind up on the waiver wire at some point in like April and May when fantasy managers realize that they don't necessarily have the luxury of stashing. I'd be more comfortable looking to stash myself as we get closer to their return dates.
Yeah, that's a big reason why a lot of times I say don't draft into injuries, because the injuries are going to find you. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to get in that situation where you just run out of storage room and then you have to cut guys you don't want to cut. I'll just mention one more hurt guy. Did Taj Bradley, either before season or now, is he somebody? No. We know he has big strikeout upside. No, hands off.
Yeah, I would have been a little more interested if I had been able to see him in the spring and see what changes he had made. There were a lot of, he was constantly tweaking things last year, and it just wasn't a cohesive attack plan, and he didn't look consistent. I have a lot of questions in his approach. I have a lot of questions in his overall stuff. He's very kind of like fastball centric with the fastball and the cutter. And I don't know how the arsenal all plays together. So then you had an injury on top of that, that had a vague timeline of return. And I wasn't taking that leap. Certainly interested in seeing him pitch when he comes back. He was not one of the guys I was willing to gamble on the IL.
You know, one guy I did gamble on, and maybe I'm kidding myself, but Braxton Garrett, I've always thought was a good pitcher. And they soft-pedaled his shoulder injury. Again, I talk about the BS detector. Maybe they're fooling me. Maybe he's more hurt than they think, although they do talk about him maybe pitching this month. So he is somebody, and I know he's more the control, strikeouts by volume guy, and people have different opinions on that type of pitcher. So there you go. We pretty much run through the entire injury list for pitchers.
Yeah, I will say I'm more interested in stashing Garrett's teammate, Edward Cabrera, on the IL, because I think he's also going to come back. And in spring, he had shown a much better command and feel for his pitches than he had last year. That was to me, the only thing standing in his way of like having legitimate breakout, because the raw stuff is really good. And I think command is something you can pick up on earlier than like, oh, his new curveball looks like this. It wasn't really new pitches. It was just having a better feel for those pitches and having a better ability to spot those pitches up. And so I'm comfortable stashing Edward Cabrera and seeing if we can get a little bit of runway. And if that command, does carry over into the regular season, I think he could have a decent year this year.
And because you have Jared Jones and all your rosters, you don't really need pitching anyway.
I do, sadly. And Bobby Miller gave up a home run in the first inning of this game. So we'll see how this goes. But Scott and I are going to get to the main segment of the show, which is going to be, we're going to try to go through as many guys as we can quickly. We're going to talk about some plate discipline improvers and fallers in the first half of the first month, first few weeks even of the season. But before we do that, you need to get your weekdays started with Bet the Edge. Join Jay Croucher and Drew Dinsick as they break down MLB, NFL Draft, NBA, and much more. New episodes drop at 6 a.m. Eastern on the NBC Sports YouTube channel. And you can also find them in podcast form wherever you download and subscribe. So whether you're looking to get involved in awards markets or player props, check out Jay and Drew for more insight. That's Bet the Edge. New episodes at 6 a.m. Eastern on the NBC Sports YouTube channel. So Scott and I have talked a lot about early season, trying to factor to look at plate discipline, strikeout rate, walk rate, things like that. Those stats tend to stabilize at 50 plate appearances. A lot of hitters who are regular starters are nearing or have gotten 50 plate appearances already. So what I did is I set up a search queue on FanGraphs for guys with 40 plus plate appearances, because I wanted to, at least give us a little bit of buffer on either side. And I looked at guys who had shown the most improvement in their walk rate and strikeout rate based on what they did last year, and guys who had shown the biggest decline in walk rate and strikeout rate from last year. So again, if somebody didn't play enough games in 2023 or hasn't played enough games in 2024, they did not qualify. And it's important just to know that, again, even though these stats are starting to stabilize, they are starting to. That doesn't mean that a guy with a great strikeout rate right now will continue it. Case in point, last year, Jorge Mateo had a tremendous entire month of April, and everybody said, Mateo, he's fixed his plate discipline issues. He's having a breakout year. Here it is. And he cratered the rest of the year. So these are guys, Scott and I will try to give you some quick thoughts on if we believe in these sort of, breakouts or if these improvements or not. And hopefully maybe you'll pump the brakes on dropping some guys who maybe are off to slow starts, or you can pick up some guys who could still be on your wire. So the first hitter with improved plate discipline is Evan Carter. So Evan Carter, who is hitting just 182 right now on the season with one home run and one stolen base, has dropped his strikeout rate by 20.3%. And his strikeout rate is now just 11.6%. He has also increased his walk rate. His walk rate is now 20.9%. Young hitter, results aren't there. Plate discipline gains are currently there. I'm not concerned, and I would be trying to, if somebody is concerned, if you can float some offers for him, I'd be looking to add him if I could. And I'm curious if you feel the same way about Evan Carter.
For sure. I do think that most of the smart people in your league are going to feel the same way. So I would try to buy low on Evan Carter. I think it might be hard to actually execute it, but I would try anyway. Yes. Anytime I see anybody with a higher walk rate than strikeout rate, again, so long as they're not a Banjo hitter, it gets me excited. And he's got all that, all his sliders of his plate discipline stats on Savant are all pegged to the right. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he's not hitting the ball hard right now, but I mean, we saw enough of him in the regular season last year. And then during the playoff run where he was batting third, fourth, and fifth for a World Series champion. I mean, Evan Carter is already, to me, close to a fully developed, you know, offensive star, you know. Yeah. I mean, people can pick their lane between him and Wyatt Langford.
Well, that's why I think it's worth exploring his value in your fantasy league, because mm-hmm. I was surprised that his value started to go down in ADP and in drafts as Wyatt Langford started mm-hmm. to go up. And shiny, I think there's toy, a little yeah. there's a little bit of this thing that happens where when we see a guy on a team, it's like, oh, this is their best young player. And then so somewhere in our head, we feel like there can't be two really good young players. So if Wyatt Langford is really good, then maybe we're not as excited about Evan Carter. And so I saw his ADP start to actually go down as we got closer to the regular season starting. And now he started off the year slow. And so it's just worth taking the temperature in your league to see if maybe the player, the person who has Evan Carter, doesn't think he's bad, but maybe doesn't think he's as ready as somebody like Langford. And so maybe you can get him for, you know, a more established outfielder who's having a solid start to the year, but maybe you don't think has the upside of Evan Carter, and you can do one of those kind of swaps. Or if your team is fine with pitching, you haven't been ravaged by pitching injuries, and another team, the team with Evan Carter, has been ravaged by pitching injuries, maybe you can offer a pitcher and like a lesser outfielder and get Evan Carter back. So these are things where, like, you don't necessarily have to buy low as much as you can just say, oh, maybe the team that has Evan Carter has other priorities right now, and I can help meet those priorities and also get Evan Carter because of that.
Great piece of advice. And trade tip, say you're targeting Evan Carter for any of the reasons that you mentioned, which are all really good frames to make a trade. What you don't do is go to your opponent and say, hey, I see Evan Carter's holding you down. He's hitting 182.
I'll take him from you.
Yeah, I'll take him off you. I'll be so magnanimous to get that Evan yeah. Carter problem off your roster. Because even if you're talking about an unsophisticated opponent, that's immediately going to perk their ears up. They're going to realize you're trying to pull a fast yes. one on.
Here's them. This guy who sucks, but I would like him, please.
Speaking generalities, they yeah. need the pitching. They need the pitching. Say, hey, I've run pretty well with pitching. I could use an outfielder. Let them come to Carter. Let them think right. that they're sneaking Carter onto your roster versus you're sneaking him away. And isn't it funny? You mentioned how him and Langford, how people play that pick a lane game, and you mm-hmm. have to pick one guy and not the other guy sometimes. And we saw that, you know, the famous Maris Mantle chase. Everybody wanted, this is obviously predates us, but everybody wanted Mantle to set the home run record and not Roger Maris. And Billy Crystal made a great movie about that. I think about when Freddie Freeman and Eric Hosmer came up right around the same time, and it was pick a lane. It's like, well, Freddie Freeman's good, but he's not Eric Hosmer. And of course, right. you know, Freddie Freeman's going to the Hall of Fame. Eric Hosmer had a fine career, but it wasn't anything close to Freddie Freeman. But people, they played the pick a lane game, and everybody decided apparently to pick Hosmer, not everybody, but the majority, which I always thought, why is he better than Freeman? I don't know. I think I like Freeman a little bit more. As it turns out, Freeman ended up being a lot better. But yeah, just back to the trading, you know, be a little bit coy about it. And also, one thing I love to do is, okay, again, Carter team. Say you want to focus on trading for one of his outfielders. You want to get a little bit more specialized. Ask him or her to rank their outfielders, their depth chart. You don't have right. to agree with it. If they set up a depth chart that you think you can exploit it. If they set up a depth chart that you don't, if you like the information they give you, take advantage of it. If you don't like it, you can argue against it.
Right. Sometimes I would even say, like, these are the three guys in your outfield who interest me. I don't mm-hmm. know how you value them.
For sure.
And they can say, oh, I have them 1, 2, 3. And then that gives you a little more information.
Yeah, get some information. And just have conversations, even informal conversations. Or sometimes a great way to get a trade started is to talk about all the things on their team that's going right. Like, oh, yeah, I know so-and-so is playing well. I know you don't want to trade him, stuff like that. Just, you know, just get into a good conversation. And also with trading, and Fred Zinke does a lot of trade content for us over at Yahoo. You should read any of that you can. I think he dropped a piece on Wednesday. Keep in mind that you're probably going to trade with this person for the rest of the season or maybe for the many seasons to come. Don't look at it as like, okay, I'll really rip them off and then that'll be the one trade we make and then they'll hate me for the rest of my life. You know, you want to approach it like you want to have a long relationship with this person.
Yeah, the idea of winning trades is sometimes overblown.
For sure.
The second guy who pops up on this list is Christopher Morel. Christopher Morel is starting the year hitting 326, sorry, with three home runs, 10 runs, 10 RBIs. It is warranted with a huge strikeout rate improvement. He has dropped his strikeout rate 20.1% down to 10.9%. The walk rate has also dropped. So this is a little bit of like him being a little more aggressive. But, you know, in the early going, that's working out for him. There were some swing and miss concerns. There were some defense concerns, but he has come out of the gates red hot. And so do you think that this sticks for him?
Some version of it sticks. I don't think anybody thinks he's a 326 hitter, although his expected batting average is even higher than that. It's 346 right now, according to his StatCast data. He's such a fascinating player for me because he lists at 5'11", 145. Maybe he's a little bit heavier than that now, but I mean, he's a slider guy. And the fact that he could intelligently craft himself into a power hitter is I think, a fascinating story. He slugged over 500 last year. He was a different type of player when he debuted in 2022. I've always liked Morel, and I don't think I have him anywhere. I love multiple position guys, and I don't have him anywhere this year. It kills me. I think the improvement on some level, it's the high end of his range right now. He's going to regret. Nobody expects him to have a 975 OPS when the season ends, but I think he's made himself into a bona fide major leaguer, and the Cubs really like him. He's always batting like cleanup or fifth for them, and that's a decent line, you know, behind, say, Suzuki, behind Cody Bellinger. This is a lineup we want to be invested in. Yeah, I wish I had Christopher Morel. I believe he's going to go down as somebody who really smashes his ADP, and unfortunately, I don't think I'm getting any of this.
Yeah. Somebody who is not smashing their ADP because their ADP was so high is Corbin Carroll, who has dropped his strikeout rate 13.6%. He is striking out just 5.8% of the time and is walking 15.4% of the time. That's three times more, basically, walks than strikeouts. That's something that you obviously really like. However, I find myself with some concerns here. Now, Carroll is hitting 227. He has three steals, which we love. But at the beginning of the year, I talked about how his shoulder worried me a little bit because he had injured it twice the end of last year, had no surgery connected to it. Right now, his average exit velocity is just 81 miles per hour. That is down almost 9 miles per hour from last year. It's still early, so we have to understand that. His max exit velocity is down significantly from last year. He has zero barrels. He has not barreled a baseball so far this year. His ground ball rate is up. His pull rate is down. These are all things that suggest to me a guy who maybe doesn't have the power in his swing and maybe knows that and is being a little bit more passive, is getting on base, is hitting ground balls, is using his speed, but This doesn't strike me early on in the year as a guy who feels that he has the requisite like thump in his swing to turn on a pitch and drive it. And he's happy to work the count and slap ground balls and get on base that way. And that's not to say that can't give you a valuable season. He has three steals right now. He stole 54 bases last year, but that worries me as a first round pick.
I think those are legitimate concerns. All those hard hit metrics just pinned to the left, the bad side. And also, as much as I do love the plate discipline and the walks and strikeouts being close to one and all that stuff, there's also a school of thought. I haven't watched enough Arizona baseball this year to speak to this as just anything more than a theory. But sometimes I wonder if you can be too selective at the plate and maybe you're missing – and this can actually be quantified. And if I made a couple of clicks, I could give you a better – idea on this theory, but sometimes you're missing the idea is, this is one thing that Freddie Freeman excels in, is that you want to swing at strikes. You don't want to take strikes. You don't want to take the best pitch you get in a bat down the middle of the plate, and then you, because you're trying to work the count sometimes. So I wonder if maybe Carroll might have gone a little bit too far with the passiveness. But the big thing here, the big thing that concerns me, is that the hard hit metrics are really lousy right now for a guy who came into the season with a shoulder injury. I thought your fade of Carroll, we know he's going to steal bases and he's a star, and you know, he, and talk about number one prospects panning out. He was number one on the Keith Law prospect list last year. So there's a, you know, it's something that Jackson Holliday can aspire to, but I would be nervous to be rostering Corbin Carroll right now. And I think you made the right call when you steered people away from him preseason.
I wish I had more shares of Jazz Chisholm, though. So Jazz is a guy who has started the year pretty strong as well. He has two home runs and two steals, which is good for his fantasy value. He's hitting .210. What has started the year strong for him is that his walk rate is up 10.6% to 17.4%. A guy with that kind of speed, if he's walking more, getting on base more, is going to be valuable for you. I still think that he's, you know, going to be able to get to his power. He's cut his strikeout rate from like 31% down to 24%. These are all positive things. For him, it's always been health. So these changes are, I think, are beneficial, but as long as he stays healthy, that should be good. So I'm happy to see that.
Yep, stays healthy and stays off the fast food. We talked about it being a fork in the road season for Chisholm. Can he play? We're at the point now where I'd love 150 games or something like that. If you told me I'm getting 135 games out of Jazz Chisholm, I think I might take it, because he's had so many, you know, half seasons or, you know, 40% seasons. But I feel like, and I know this isn't hard, fast rule, but I feel like if Jazz Chisholm is going to be a special player, we're going to know by the end of this year. And I was a step towards the optimistic. I certainly didn't go all in on Chisholm. And again, I talk about sometimes the need to have polarized takes, I think, is a bad idea, but a lot of times you have to be on one side or the other, at least to some degree. And I was definitely a step in the Jazz Chisholm direction in draft season. And I am optimistically encouraged by what I've seen so far.
Yeah. Another guy I've been telling people to add is Jose Siri, who is now over 50% rostered in Yahoo. So I had to take him off of some articles before, but he said, we always knew he had speed, and he only stole 12 bases last year. And then he said, I'm going to steal 30 this year. And your thought is like, okay, we'll see. But he's stolen six already. He is running.
He's running.
He's also increased his walk rate 9.4%, which is up to 14.9%. He still has a high strikeout rate. It's still 36%. But again, if that walk rate can maintain, even like if he's near double digits, like let's say he's not 15%, but he's at 10%. The more time this guy is on first base, the more opportunities he's going to get to steal. I don't know that he winds up as a 260 hitter. He could still be a 230 hitter for you. But if he's a 230 hitter with a mid 300s OBP, as opposed to a 260 OBP, he could be a 2020 guy. He hit 25 home runs last year. If he's a 2020 guy with a 230 batting average, in a solid lineup, that still carries fantasy value. I don't think you're getting first round breakout from Jose Siri, but I think you could get a guy that is useful in a lot of fantasy formats. And if you're in an OPS format or an OBP format, these gains make you even more intrigued, because if that better on base percentage sticks, he goes from being a detriment in on base percentage leagues where he was 267 last year to maybe just being average with that power and speed. And so I think Jose Siri is somebody who could be valuable, beneficial to add in a lot of different formats.
Yeah, I think he could easily be a major step forward this year. And one of the rare Tampa Bay players who's guaranteed a spot in the lineup every day too. So let's go get Siri. Good job pushing him past 50% tag in Yahoo, but there's still room on the Jose Siri bandwagon, and I'm certainly on it.
Yeah, we should just very much briefly mention another outfielder. As Red Sox fans, we're enjoying the Tyler O'Neill experience so far. He has his walk rate up 6.5% to 17.1%. He continues to club solo home runs, but I believe that people will eventually get on base in front of him. We both were optimistic about him before the season, saying with this park and this lineup, if he plays regularly, he should have a good year. We're starting to see that good year, I think. You know, contract year, right? Do not underestimate the contract year. This guy wants to make some money. The park plays well for him. I think Tyler O'Neill's in for a really good year. We thought so before. It's nice to see it play out a little bit.
Great defender too. And right field is such a challenging position in Fenway. So as much as it hurt to see Story get hurt for the Red Sox with the pitching start they were off to, at least they have, you know, Rafaela signed the big extension. Mm-hmm. Tyler O'Neill's on a prove it deal, but the outfield defense will be good this year.
Yeah. I'm going to end this risers section with two second basemen. And I'm curious if you have a preference in rostering either of these guys. The first one is Bryson Stott, whose walk rate is up 8.5% to 14.6%. He is only hitting 206 to start the year with two stolen bases, but obviously the plate discipline gains suggest that maybe batting average boost is coming. And then Jonathan India of the Reds, whose walk rate is up 7.2% to 17%. His strikeout rate is also down to just 12.8%. So again, a guy whose walk rate right now is higher than his strikeout rate. He's hitting just 243, but the plate discipline metrics might suggest that better days are coming. Regular playing time in Seattle, Cincinnati right now. So I'm curious if you're into both or either of these guys.
I like both players, but the one screaming stat, and again, we're talking about 10 days, whatever it is, but Jonathan India is hitting 243. His expected batting average is 384. I know it's a tiny sample. That is an enormous gap. Mm-hmm. Whenever you see a player with that type of difference between his real and expected average, and then it's a guy in India who has power-speed combination. We've seen that before. I think he was Rookie of the Year his first season, or if he wasn't, he came in second. And the big problem with India preseason was, okay, well, he's had injuries in the past, and look how glutted their roster is. Well, a bunch of his teammates are hurt, so he's at the front of a Cincinnati lineup I still like. I tried to draft India before the season. I'm probably a little bit overweight on him, but there's a guy. Again, you know, you can probably say to somebody, you're a little glutted in the infield. I could use one, and maybe he's going to look at Jonathan India. He's hitting 243 with no home runs. Yeah, let's move this guy, and they might not see the OBP.
Right.
They might not be a baseball savant guy. Yeah, I think Jonathan India is a great guy to go get right now.
We've talked so much about it. It is not just, oh, look at the expected stats or whatever. It's which of those stats jump out, and is there anything tangible that we can connect to that says, oh, this is something to monitor? So when you see that gap between expected batting average and batting average, it should get the alarm bells going. And then you look at the plate discipline improvements, and you see, okay, this is a guy who metrics suggest should be hitting better, who's showing the best plate discipline he's had so far in his career, who's in a good lineup in a good hitter's park.
Batting
so maybe
first.
Actually batting leadoff. So maybe there's something here that I can rest my hat on a little bit.
A lot of dots are connecting right now. And the great thing is, again, I don't want to, I hate to give out advice that assumes your opponents are idiots, because if they are, then you don't need any help from us. But it's a very human response for your opponent to maybe think, well, Jonathan India is not helping me. He's hitting 243 right. with no home runs. I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah, for sure. There are some other guys that aren't helping you, and we're going to talk about them quickly to wrap up the show, guys whose plate discipline is falling or regressing. Before we do that, just a quick note that you can find all episodes of the Roto World Baseball Show and all your other favorite NBC sports shows on Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBC Sports. And just a reminder, in anywhere where you do download the Roto-World Baseball Show, if you can leave a rating and review for Scott and I, it is super helpful. It allows other people to find the show and allows us to continue to make this the best podcast that we can. So when you do listen to these shows or download them, rate and review them for us. It's incredibly helpful. We'll try to be helpful to you with this final bit of guys who are struggling to start the year. Some of this might just be, hey, it's 10 games. Let's not overreact. And that's totally fine. But there are some guys I wanted to put out into the world. The biggest strikeout rate decliner is veteran Max Muncy, whose strikeout rate is up 14.6%. He is striking out 41.1% of the time so far for the Dodgers. Muncy is a guy who has battled some injuries in the past, who has never, you know, who has had some elevated strikeout rates in the past. Nothing, obviously, this high. 33 years old, are we seeing any sort of decline or just a slow start?
I think it's just a slow start. He's a high strikeout, high fly ball player. And as Gene McCaffrey's always made the point, that those guys just run really streaky. Muncy's got the good real estate in that LA lineup. He's just going to be somebody who's going to have 2 or 3 months where he doesn't hit, and the other 3 months he's going to hit like 25 home runs. I still think Max Muncy is who we thought he was. Certainly, you have to manage his batting average expectations, but I don't see any reason why he won't have 30 home runs at the end of the year and probably hit around 225 or 230. If that fits in your plans, I'm fine with Max Muncy.
Yeah. An interesting note I noticed with Christian Walker, whose strikeout rate is up 11.7% to 30.9%. Christian Walker has been at 19% strikeout rate the last two seasons. So him jumping to over 30 is noteworthy. It's noteworthy also when it comes with a huge spike in, an 8% spike in fly ball rate. He is barreling the heck out of the ball to start the year. He's hitting the ball incredibly hard. He's pulling the ball more, lifting the ball more. It seems like there might be a shift to get to his power a little more regularly, which is crazy from somebody who hit 36 and 33 home runs the last 2 years, that it seems like he's trying to get more to his power. He's starting the year fine. I mean, you're not complaining about a 292 batting average with 3 home runs and 11 RBIs so far. This to me was just something that I'm taking note of, because it looks early on like a little bit of an approach shift, and I just want to see how that maybe translates as the season goes on.
Yeah, you nailed it. I think it's an approach shift too. All of his hard hit metrics are terrific. Expected batting average 272, expected slugging of 534. Even if Walker's approach is a little bit different this year, I think you have no worries about him returning at least what his ADP cost, if maybe getting even a little bit of profit, because he's just one of those veteran guys, 30s, a little bit of the boring value vet. I'd love to be sitting on Christian Walker on my teams right now.
Yeah. Two Reds here we'll talk about. The Reds, they're off to a bit of a slower start than we expected. They are 9th in baseball in runs scored, and they are 13th in baseball in batting average. All things that are like, I think we thought, oh, this is a breakout. And they're not having a bad start to the year by any stretch of the imagination. They are, however, 3rd worst in strikeout rate at the start of the year. They are striking out a lot. Two guys who fall in there are Jaime Candelario, who is up 11.2%. He's striking out 33.3% of the time. And then his teammate, Will Benson, also has seen the strikeout rate go up 7.3%. Benson is striking out 38.6% of the time. I'm curious what your concern levels are here. I know you have subscribed to guys who sign new contracts tend to, you know, can struggle when they try to prove their value. That could be part of what's happening with Candelario. Benson has had some elevated strikeout rates in the past. We believe that he was kind of, he was correcting those. The power and speed is still really intriguing. A 38.6% strike rate is not great. And there is a guy like Jake Fraley who's not playing against lefties while Benson does play against lefties. And you could see a situation where maybe the Reds switch that and Fraley plays against everybody. Benson only plays against righties. I'm just curious if you have concerns about either of these guys.
Yeah, more to Benson, because as you said, he's guaranteed no playing time. The Candelario contract can work both ways. As you said, it can be a stressor. Somebody changes teams, they feel a need to justify the deal. Not that Candelario got like ridiculous money. He didn't get an Ohtani contract or anything like that, but he got a contract that can maybe lead to some emotional strain. But then the flip side is it's also going to keep him in the lineup. He's either really have to hit poorly to lose his job, and the injuries will help as well. I'm more concerned about Benson, because as you said, the lefty hitter, you always worry about them falling into platoon, even would be the strong side of it. What's bailed out Benson so far, he's got the category juice and his hard hit metrics are really good. He's barreling the ball plenty. And when he is making contact, screaming things are coming from it. But most teams are not going to. I know we're in a different time of baseball where not everybody who hits 225 is automatically a bad offensive player. But Will Benson can't afford to hit 225 for that much longer before it's going to creep into his playing time.
Right. I should note that another of their teammates has joined this list, not because of a strikeout rate increase, even though the strikeout rate is 30%. Christian Encarnacion Strand has not drawn a walk to start the year, so his walk rate is down 5.8%. He has 15 strikeouts and no walks in 11 games. He's hitting 163. This is a situation where maybe, like, if the Reds had been at full strength, he would have been demoted or is in jeopardy of being demoted. Do you think that, you know, with Encarnacion Strand only being 24 years old with options left, is there some risk that if this continues for him, he could go down to the minors?
I am concerned about this because it's one thing if you don't walk, but if you're not striking out either, well, no big deal. Well, he's striking out plenty. Well, it's one thing if you strike out a lot, but we talked about Benson. When he's making contact, he's, you know, good things are happening. The contact rate stats for, I'm sorry, the hard hit stats for Encarnacion Strand are pretty pedestrian right now. He only has the one home run. He's slugging .265. Yes, his expected slugging is a couple hundred points higher, but this is a profile where I think he's, even with the roster a little bit glutted with the injuries, I don't think he's guaranteed to be with the team all through the first half of the season if he hits like this. I think he probably has maybe 3 or 4 more weeks to sort it out, which is, I guess, a fair amount of time.
But yeah, exactly.
I'm a little bit concerned about him. I mean, he's actually been dropped in a couple of my leagues, which has periodic bidding, and I'm not sure what to do with him. I actually have a choice to make with him between now and tomorrow morning. And that's one of my favorite things, by the way. I used to set up leagues on Yahoo with first come, first serve waivers, and there's a time in my life that I liked that, you know, retail therapy whenever I wanted it. Sure. Now I prefer the periodic bidding.
The offers, yeah. My home league is a Yahoo league that does Wednesday night, Sunday night, and yep. I enjoy having the one midweek waiver period in there. I like that. And yeah, I'm saying right now, I would say if it matters to you, I've started looking a little bit toward my waiver column for the weekend, and I currently am writing up Encarnacion Strand as a hold. I would encouraging people to hold on to him. I know they're getting itchy trigger fingers. I think we could wait a little bit longer. Would be my suggestion.
Yeah, I think you're probably right on that.
We have some big names to end our quick rundown, but I did want to hit you with two second basemen right now who are struggling to start the year in terms of both performance and strikeout rate. Luis Arias from the Marlins, his strikeout rate is up 9.3%. He's hitting just .234 to start the year. Obviously, we know batting average is his major calling card. So if the strikeout rate is up, the contact rates are down, and the batting average is down, he's really not giving you much of anything. And then Tyro Estrada, with the Giants, his strikeout rate is up 8.6%. His walk rate is also down, but just 2%. He's hitting just .174. Are you concerned about either Estrada or Arias?
I think Arias will just go back to being who he is. He's a specialty player. He's kind of a unicorn in today's game. There's things that he does that other people don't do, but you're not going to get power from him or steals, really. So he fits a certain roster build. There's a lot of rosters where he won't make sense on. Estrada's a tough guy because he came a little bit out of nowhere, no pedigree, journeyman, you know, middle of his career. He kind of figured things out. He's had some injuries. They have other options. He's not somebody who's always guaranteed to play every day. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he has such a stable collection of skills that he can afford any hissing on. The air can't leave the balloon before it goes to a period where I don't trust Estrada. Estrada has me nervous. I think Arias is going to be what we thought he was going to be, albeit there's never going to be a lot of upside with him. Estrada would be a player I'd be trying to. I don't want to have to rely on him. If he's part of my bench or somebody I play once in a while, I can live with that. I hope he's not somebody who projects as a starter for you because I think you need to do better than that.
I've moved him to the bench where I have him in certain leagues to see if he can figure it out rather than dropping him because I do like the power speed mix that he gives you.
Motivate him on the bench.
Yes, you got to motivate him on the bench. All right, three stars we're going to end with very quickly. I think the first one will be a quick and easy one. Mm-hmm. So I made him first. It's Adelis Garcia. His walk rate is down 6%. He's walking just 4.1% of the time this year. His strikeout rate is also up almost 3%. So he's striking out over 30% of the time, walking just 4% of the time. But he's hitting .244 with 4 home runs. It feels like we've always known that Adelis Garcia was somebody with poor plate discipline. So it's getting a little worse to start this year. But I don't know that that makes him a meaningfully different player in our eyes than he already was.
Yeah, the three names you have to me are green light, yellow light, red light. Garcia's the green light. I feel like what he's doing, maybe the shape of it is a little bit different, but it's pretty much, this is who Adelis Garcia is. I'm not at all concerned about him.
Is the yellow light Vladimir Guerrero Jr.?
It is.
So we'll skip to him then, and we'll get to the red light to end the show. So Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was on here for a strikeout rate increase. So Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s strikeout rate is up 7.6%. It's just 22.2%. So for a guy who hits in the middle of the order at first base, who has 30-plus home run power, a 22% strikeout rate is not something that is alarming. His walk rate is also up. He's walking 12.9% of the time. That's up 3%. However, he is hitting just 195 or 196, sorry, two home runs, four RBIs to start the year. I know there were a lot of people that kept saying, like, this is a guy who is going to, you know, hit. He's going to go back to, like, what he did in, you know, 2021. He's going to hit 40 home runs and hit 270 or 280. And I kept saying, if I could get Christian Walker 50 picks later, I was happy to get Christian Walker. I don't believe this is who Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is. I don't think it's going to be this bad. But I think this maybe lends a little bit of credence to the fact that, like, he's not that 340 homer guy. And I don't know, you're yellow, so I guess you have a little bit of concern.
Yeah, I don't know how quickly some of these batted ball metrics get significant for us, but the ground ball rate has crept up a little bit. He's pulling the ball less. I think the problem with Vladimir Guerrero is, again, a guy who came into baseball as, like, the prospect, right, is that he came in with sky-high expectations. Obviously, his father was a Hall of Famer, was a great player, and he had that one season with the monster home runs. And I don't know that – maybe Guerrero is just destined to be a good player or a very good player, but not like this seasonal MVP candidate guy. And he hits so many ground balls. He can be a frustrating guy to watch. I'm calling him yellow because I don't want you to do anything rash. Here's the thing. If you put Guerrero out in the trade market, and again, you know, get to it, meander to Guerrero's name. Don't scream out you want to trade him and, you know, get lowballed all day. That's not fun. But if you could get a reasonable value for value trade for him and you just wanted to be out of the Guerrero business, I'm okay with that. That's why he's a yellow light for me. I just am starting to think that maybe he's a B+, A- type of guy, and maybe he's not really a star.
I think it's entirely possible. And I think that if you wanted to look at what could help me, quote unquote, get out of the Vladimir Guerrero business is, like, if you have the ability to get a first baseman who might also steal you some bases, maybe that's a way of saying, okay, even if Guerrero bounces back, like, Christian Walker had 11 steals last year. So if you could find a way to get somebody like Christian Walker or Christian Walker, maybe you get a little stolen base boost on top of potentially getting very similar offensive production. But to your point, I wouldn't really do anything about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. right now because he's not a cut and you don't want to give him away. But there are some concerns that maybe some of our expectations for him were inaccurate.
Exactly how I feel.
The red light, which is the final hitter we will talk about, is Nolan Arenado. I think that I will say off the bat, I think that this probably requires a much deeper dive than Scott and I are going to do right now in order to really identify if anything is wrong. You can watch him and you just see things aren't right. He's on here because his walk rate fell. His walk rate fell. Let's see the exact number here. Sorry, good radio. His walk rate fell 4.8%, but he's walking just 1.9% of the time right now. The strikeout rate is fine. He's hitting 245, no home runs. He is pulling the ball 62% of the time, but hitting ground balls 50% of the time. So he's just, like, rolling over a lot of ground balls. The exit velocities are down. You know, I'm not concerned. Like, he's not swinging and missing a lot, but it just feels like a guy whose swing is all messed up.
Yeah, I'm concerned here because I talk about often player development is not always linear, but player decline is almost always linear. And Arenado was really close to winning the MVP in 2022. That's the year I believe Goldschmidt won. And I think the best defensive third baseman I've ever seen, although Chapman is awfully close. But, you know, Arenado, basically, I think last year was the first year he didn't win a Gold Glove. And I hope Arenado makes the Hall of Fame. I think he's always been a better player in my mind than Scott Rolen was. And Rolen was, to me, a borderline Hall of Famer. He went in. I had no problem with it. But I think Arenado had a better career than Roland. Not that Nolan Arenado is not retiring tomorrow, but last year he went from a 151 OPS plus to a 109 OPS plus. And I'm not trying to make this like an SAT question, like, oh, okay, this year he'll have the 59 OPS plus and he'll stink and they'll cut him. I'm not saying anything like that, but his age 33 season, if he were to end the year as an average offensive player, I would not at all be surprised. And I'm just afraid that maybe at the end of the year, he's going to be hitting 260 with like 19 home runs. I'm concerned that this is just, again, the decline is often linear. I could see him. I think last year's stats, I think anybody who drafted him, if they could get to the numbers he finished with last year, would take it in a second. I think he's going to end the year with around 20 home runs. In fact, I think he's probably closer to Matt Chapman in real life value right now than most people realize.
When I talked to my friend who works in an MLB organization about those pitching injuries, and he said we're way more concerned about shoulder and back injuries than we are elbow injuries. I know he was talking specifically about pitching, but back injuries for hitters, given the torque and the way that you have to use your hips and back to hit, are similarly concerning. Had back injuries last year. His swing looks like somebody who's fighting against himself a little bit. He's not swinging out of the zone more often, so it's not like he's chasing pitches to make this poor contact, but he's just not making good contact. He is not working the count in the way that he used to, but also, like, I wouldn't be surprised if we dug in and saw that he's being challenged more.
That's so, it. Like, that's
pitchers
it, right?
Pitchers aren't afraid of him.
They're not nibbling. They're saying, here it is. Come and hit it.
Right. And so actually, if I look right now, like, his zone percent is way up. Mm-hmm. So maybe pitches are coming at him a little more. So that's why the walk rate is down and he's just not able to drive the ball or hit it meaningfully hard. So they just keep attacking him. It wouldn't shock me if this is injury related. It really wouldn't. I'm not going to diagnose somebody off watching swings on TV. I'm just saying, given the back injury in the past and what we're seeing right now, it would not surprise me if this is a guy who is not able to turn on pitches the way that we are used to seeing from him.
I feel like I have to ask you, I know he doesn't fit necessarily the walk strikeout frame, but I think Arenado, I have to think Goldschmidt. As I mentioned, they're teammates. Goldie won the 2002 MVP. I also think Goldschmidt is a Hall of Famer. He's been long one of my favorite players, as Arenado is. Goldschmidt took a step backwards last year. He's off to a really poor start. 182, 294, 250. He's got one home run, no stolen bases. Not that you draft him for a lot of them, but you expect 5 to 10. He's 3 years older seasonal age than Arenado. Mm-hmm. It's age 36 season for Goldschmidt. What's your state of the Goldschmidt address?
Yeah, I'm not as concerned, but that doesn't mean I'm not concerned. This is somebody who he is seeing. He could be on here for strikeout rate. His strikeout rate is up to over 30%. It'd be the first time we've seen that from him. The hard hit rates, exit velocities are down. You know, the pull rate is up, but I'm not seeing any real difference in, like, ground ball weight. His line drive rate is actually, like, way up, which is interesting that he's hitting the ball softer, but hitting a lot more line drives.
Man, there's a lot of stuff on the Savant page pulled to the left, though, which is not Paul Goldschmidt that I know.
Right. And also his swinging strike rate is by far the highest it's ever been. Mm-hmm. So there's some concern here. I have a little more concern with Arenado because I think it's injury related, whereas I think Goldschmidt could just be a slow start, could be needing to figure out his approach or swing as he's no longer able to do the things that he used to do. I will say I was more optimistic coming into the season on Goldschmidt, and that was potentially foolish. And I guess I'm happy I didn't draft as many shares and I just waited and got guys, or I drafted in a position where I was fortunate enough to, like, just get Bryce Harper and not really have to worry about it, which was the case in a lot of leagues. But yeah, I'm worried about both of these guys, and I'm slightly worried more about Arenado because I think there could be an injury at play.
Well said.
We will try to also have even more good news on our next podcasts. Scott and I, again, will continue, you know, using our Monday podcast to look at what happened over the weekend, looking at, you know, waiver wire ads and things like that, and then trying to use these Wednesday shows as stats begin to stabilize to kind of tell you some guys who are off to good or poor starts at the start of the year and see if we can help make your kind of roster construction issues or roster construction ideas solidify them for you and really kind of make sure you're taking your team to the next level. You can follow both of us on Twitter. I am at SamskyNYC. Scott is at Scott_Pianowski. If you haven't yet, you can check out my newest column, Mixing It Up, over on NBC Sports this morning, where I look at the pitch mix changes for all of Reed Detmers, Spencer Turnbull, Louis Varland, and Jordan Hicks, and told you whether or not they should impact how you feel about them in fantasy. So thanks for checking out the Roto-World Baseball Show, and we'll see you next week for more baseball goodness.